Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
I've only loved two women in my life, my mama and that girl. You get what I'm saying? She just accepted me for who I am, and I accepted her for who she was. You know what I mean? We both didn't come from the best upbringings, but, you know, we came from single moms or whatever. And we just had a lot of things in common, and I just missed her to death. I guess it's kind of like a person who goes to jail. Life stops at that moment for them. So even if they get out 20 years from then, they still the same person that they were on the day they went to jail. So for me, when I think about this whole situation, life stopped on the day that I went to the room, and all I could think about is she took all her stuff and left, and she didn't even leave me a goodbye letter. Her not picking up the phone for me, and I'm talking about, this is, you just left me and you didn't tell me goodbye or nothing. And even if she had did that, usually within a couple of days, just say, hey, I'm sorry, whatever, I had to do what I had to do.
On October 30th, 2003, 28-year-old Marcy Crane and her husband were staying at a hotel in the Atlanta, Georgia metropolitan area. On that cool fall evening, she waited for her husband to leave the hotel to run a quick errand. Once he had left, Marcy packed up her things and departed. She has never been seen again. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 212 of The Vanished, Marcy Crane's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Marcy Crane was a young woman from Georgia who was making the most of her life in her late 20s. She had five children that she raised along with help from her sisters and mother. She sought success in the real estate business and was known for her generous and loving personality. While she cherished being a mother and an aunt to her young nieces and nephews, she was looking to the future with her budding career, hoping to support her family and enjoy a comfortable life. We spoke to Marcy's niece, Shahida, who told us what she remembers about her favorite aunt.
Marcy was super smart. She was young. So we were really close as far as her, my sister, and my cousin were all like 3 years apart. And Marcy was the youngest of all of our aunts. So she was like the cool aunt to hang out with. She listened to the same kind of music as us and, you know, things of that nature because she wasn't that much older. She was the youngest of all of her siblings and the only one to go to college. She actually became a real estate agent and a broker, and she did really well, really well.
At only 28, Marcy had five children at home and helped to raise her nieces and nephews, too. We were also able to speak with Marcy's daughter, Khadija. She was only about 10 years old when her mom disappeared, but she told us that she only has fond memories of her mother.
Well, I do remember that she was always like fun, kind of like the party type person. So she was always joking about, you know, the stuff. Like, I never remember her being like a serious mom. She was like really always jokey, silly, very beautiful. I just remember like having a lot of fun as a kid. She's always used to make sure that we have, she was like one of those name brand type moms. She would always have us in name brand clothes and have us in nice houses. Well, I can remember anyway. She was a really amazing, had a, like a really nice, beautiful soul. Every person loves, you know, wants their mom around. Even now, as an adult, you just want your, to have your mom. Especially now that I have kids, it's like, oh, you know, I want them to see their grandmother, you know, wondering, you know, where she is, what happened to her. Those are always questions that I have. You know, it's just not any clarity or any, you don't have any comfort or anything because you just never know what happens.
We also spoke to Marcy's nephew, Jatarvis, who was close to her in age and shared not only the person she was when she disappeared, but also some of the things she dealt with growing up.
You know, it was kind of rough for her growing up. I know she'd been in foster care a few times. She always used to get into it with her mom. That's how she ended up in foster care all the time. She was a great person. Like, nobody, I've never met a person on earth that didn't like her or had any kind of beef with her or would want to hurt her. The only person I ever seen hurt her was her mom. She always been independent and on her own. She started having kids early. She was out on her own at a young age.
Around the time that Marcy went missing, she had recently married a man that she had only known for a short time. His name is Major. After meeting Major online, they married just a few months after they started dating. Their relationship was intense and developed rapidly. We were able to speak with Major, and he told us what drew him to Marcy and what their relationship was like.
I do remember we met on a internet, like a dating site. I think it was called Tag. Oh, she was gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. She's a beautiful woman. She just kept sending, leaving me messages. And if you ever dealt with social media or whatever, it was just a flirt thing. I was a younger man and she was a younger woman. I think initially we started off, it might have started off lustfully. Then it gradually, I fell in love with her and she fell in love with me. This woman, this beautiful woman asked me to marry her. At first it was like, this got to be a gag or something, you know what I mean? Because it's so beautiful. You know, she's an absolutely beautiful woman. She's beautiful in personality. We had so many things in common. You get what I'm saying? As far as, like, I was raised by, like, a hippie revolutionary. So, music-wise, we had the same taste in music and everything. It was just, like, she's absolutely perfect, you know, as far as compatibility. Just like a risk taker, the type of person that's very impulsive and spontaneous. A daredevil. She asked me to marry her. Of course, I didn't take her serious, but I said yes. And it seemed like 2 days later, we was on our way to South Carolina to get married.
Marcy's family had warned Major that she had some impulsive tendencies and had previously dated more than one person at a time. Major was undeterred, but never quite understood what Marcy saw in him.
She told me a long time ago, she don't go and find guys to date in the club. She could go and find them on the golf course. I got to kind of like tell you that when we got married, a couple of the relatives was kind of like trying to warn me that Marcy was a player a little bit. But I never seen it. She always made me feel like a king. So anytime I was around, I felt like a king. When she asked me about getting married, yes, I ran and we got married, but she never took my name. I used to always ask, you know, like, why did you want to marry me? And she just said, you know, I love you and all this kind of stuff. And then one day she told me, because you got game. And that, it kind of made my ego swell a little bit. But at the same time, I never understood why she wanted to marry me. It was just impulsiveness and just she was the polar opposite of me when it come down to. Like any room she go into, she light that room up. We could go to a restaurant. It'd be all of us, you know, me, her, and her kids, and her cousins. Marcy was the type that would just come in a restaurant, just people who sitting there dying, and she just go sit on the husband's lap and talk to the wife.
Major told us that Marcy's larger-than-life personality helped bring him out of his own shell, and he enjoyed just being in her company. He also liked the fact that Marcy was meticulous in her appearance, loved to go out, and maintained a facade that she was financially successful, even when things at home were shaky.
Everybody in the place loved her. She went into a room, she light up the room. That's who she is. And me, I'm laid back, always been kind of shy. Back when we met, I was very reserved and kind of shy. She's a type of person that won't let you just be like that. Just thinking about it right now just brings a smile to my face. She's just her spirit. I miss her, man. Her spirit she's just one of those spirits that you want to be around forever. When we first met, she was staying at a hotel. So this is before I met the kids. But you wouldn't think that this woman was down in any kind of way financially because she always had a regal, you know, like a sophisticated stature. You would never know if she was worried or needed money or whatever, you know what I mean, unless you really, really knew her, because she always looked classy and fancy.
People were drawn to Marcy and her ability to always make a plan come together. When we spoke to Major, he told us a story that he remembers and still laughs about today.
I got to tell you a funny story. I thought I was making a little money back in the day, you know. This was the first time that I got a chance to really meet the kid. It was around my birthday, and she said, we want to take you out for dinner. This is before I got a chance to see, like I said, before that I had saw her only once at the hotel. This is before she got into the house. So I said, okay, cool, we'll go out to eat. On the day that we got ready to go out to eat, we went to the Atlanta Fish Market. Well, the Atlanta Fish Market, I had never been there before. I took $300 out to go out to dinner. I'm thinking, you know, hey, we get out there, you know, I can pay the bill. You can tell the kids was used to balling because we got out there, everybody ordered Alaskan king crab, and each plate was like $50 or above. And I had $300. So, you know, I ordered me a little steak because I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to handle this. So when the bill came, the bill was $500 and something. I told her, I said, look, I'll be right back. I got to go to the bathroom. I went to the bathroom and I'm counting my money, and I realized I didn't have my debit card with me. And I'm like, oh my God. By the time I got back out to the table, she had already paid the bill. How life was. This woman would have like $16,000 in cash in her pocket. She could take the kids out, they go shopping, they go in the mall and spend $16,000 in one day. You know, everybody wanted to be around Marcy because Marcy always came up.
At only 28, Marcy was spending big money on many different things, and sometimes people wondered where all the money came from. Marcy worked in the real estate business, often negotiating deals on high-value houses with mortgage companies and investors. Major told us what he knows about Marcy's work, and while it sometimes seemed to be a little shady, she never got in trouble for it.
Well, she was working. Now, this was way back in the what we would call the money grab of mortgage companies, back in the predatory lending days. So she worked in the mortgage, and she was very, very smart as far as how to get money through legally, but through real estate. For example, like she would have like, she would work for a mortgage company, but she'd also be the underwriter, the real estate agent. She just was good at what she did. So she made money in real estate. She knew all about how to get investment buyers and stuff like that. But what she would do is get investment buyers, and they would help her to get homes. She would give them money at the closing table. She'd get the home, lease option the home. Meanwhile, she's still going and getting other homes. She never dealt with regular homes. She only dealt with high-end homes. And at that time, I didn't know nothing about the predatory lending and all that kind of stuff. She had learned that skill before she met me, as far as real estate goes. She never got in trouble about it that I know of. She learned that from a guy that she was dating before me, how to do it and everything. But I didn't know, as far as any trouble was concerned, I never know how to get into any trouble about it.
Major may not have known exactly what Marcy was up to, but her family was well aware that some of her business dealings were illegal. Here's Marcy's niece, Shahida, with more on that.
She had got involved with, you know, different men in her life, and because she was young, you know, she wasn't really making a lot of wise decisions. She had some unpaid parking tickets. She wrote some bad checks, things of that nature that kind of caught up with her. She ended up getting arrested, and she was in jail for a few months. I went to see her a few times. By this time she got arrested, I was in high school, so I was driving. So I went to go see her. She really wanted to kind of get her life back on track as far as the conversations we had. I know I wrote her a letter once just saying, like, I really want you to kind of grow up in so many words, you know, just so she can stop getting in trouble and stuff. She did a lot of illegal things, you know, with mortgage. I'm not sure as to what extent, but I know she did a lot of things that weren't legal within the mortgage industry. She was dating a guy that was in the mortgage industry for several years.
Marcy had dated a man named Carl, and though she was married to Major, she had maintained a relationship with Carl since before she met Major and continued the business relationship after she got married. Shahida told us that Carl was around her family for many years and that the family loved him, even if he was involved in some of Marcy's illegal activities.
We all grew to love him. His name was Carl. That's what we knew him as anyway. Me and my sister, my cousins, we called him Uncle. Marcy's kids, sometimes they would call him Dad or refer to him as their stepdad. They dated for years, but there was, you know, infidelity and different things in the relationship that kind of ended the relationship maybe after 6 years or so. You know, we found out later that he was involved in some illegal things too, but because we were still young, no one gave us a lot of information about, you know, what those illegal things were. I think we found out later after, you know, all of this happened with Marcy's disappearance that that wasn't his real name. All the years we knew him as Carl Sharp, found out later that that wasn't really his name. Although they broke up, they still remained friends, and he still pretty much remained in our lives.
Occasionally, Marcy had been incarcerated in local jails for unpaid traffic fines. Shahida has fond memories of her aunt being released from jail and the family being together again.
She did everything for us. You know, although she was doing illegal activity, my mom, her sister, was a drug addict, and she took my sister, Alicia, in at a young age. And, you know, I spent most weekends with her every summer, and she took care of us just like she took care of her own kids. So we just wanted her to stop getting in trouble, you know, for the sake of everyone in her own life. She got out of jail a couple months later, and she went to go stay with my aunt, her older sister. I remember going to pick her up. Me, my cousin, and Marcy, we went to Applebee's, and she was saying like how she missed her kids. She had sent her kids to their grandmother on their father's side, you know, while she was in jail. She was just saying how she missed the kids. She can't wait to get another house and get back on her feet. She was talking really hopeful just about starting her mortgage business back and just getting back on her feet and things like that.
After their reunion, Marcy mentioned her previous boyfriend, Carl, and told her relatives that she was back in touch with him, even though she was still married to Major. Keeping up with her relationships was no easy task, but Shahida and the other kids loved having Carl around and didn't pay much attention to anything going on with Major.
She also mentioned that her and Carl were talking again and maybe talking about getting back together and divorcing Major, the guy that she married before she got arrested. You know, we was happy to hear that because we didn't really like that guy. We didn't know him or anything like that. We were also really fond of Carl. So we were happy to hear that. We all really loved him. We thought it was great. You know, we didn't learn any about the negative stuff until after the fact. But I took her back to my aunt. We communicated over the phone a couple of times. And, you know, then I just didn't hear from her, which wasn't really strange. But then Carl showed up. He mentioned that he hadn't heard from her, and he was saying that I think she went back with Major. I think she's getting back with Major. Keep in touch. You know, I'll always be here for you. Gave me, I think, like $200 or something. He would always do that, just give out money to me and the kids.
Despite saying that he'd always be there for her, this is the last time that Marcy's family heard from Carl. And she never heard from Marcy again, either. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on. But when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. You aren't sleeping and you're stressed out. That's how it was for me, so I cleared out my cabinet and reset my health with CBD from CB Distillery. Their deep sleep gummies are amazing. CB Distillery's targeted formulations are made from the highest quality clean ingredients. No fluff, no fillers, just pure, effective CBD solutions designed to help support your health. In two non-clinical surveys, 81% of customers experienced more calm, 80% said CBD helped with pain after physical activity, and an impressive 90% said they slept better with CBD. If you struggle with a health concern and haven't found relief, make the change to CB Distillery. And with over 2 million customers and a solid 100% money-back guarantee, CB Distillery is a source to trust. I have a 20% discount to get you started. Visit cbdistillery.com and use code VANISHED for 20% off. That's cbdistillery.com, code VANISHED. cbdistillery.com. Not only were Marcy's kids, nieces, and nephews accustomed to and fond of Carl, they just didn't know much about Major, and felt like Marcy had moved too quickly with him.
Marcy just, she loved love. So I think she was lonely because of that breakup. She ended up meeting this guy off some website, offline somehow, and moved him in really quickly into her house, married him really quick. Like, she didn't know anything about him. You know, I remember asking her, like, why are you marrying this guy? Like, what do you even like about him? And I remember, like, she couldn't even tell me what she liked about him. But I think she had just kind of got to the point in her life where she was in her late 20s. And, you know, I think she just didn't want to be lonely anymore. That guy, he didn't really have anything. He didn't have his own place. He didn't have his own car. And, you know, Marcy always did really well for herself. So I just thought he was an opportunist. We never knew his last name. We learned later after they got married that it was Peterson, but we didn't really know a lot about him. We didn't know much about him at all. Carl, he was questioned in New York about some murders prior to moving to Georgia, but that's pretty much all I know. I don't know any additional information. So I don't know that she knew that bit of information, but I do know she knew more about him than we knew. Although Marcy was, she was really close to her nieces. We were more like friends, and she shared a lot with us. Although we were so young, you know, she shared a lot with us, but She also kept a lot from us, too.
Major and Marcy maintained a strange and somewhat mysterious relationship, which explains why Marcy's family was leery of him to begin with. Meanwhile, Marcy continued her business activities away from her family, and Major acknowledges that Marcy may have been involved in some fraudulent business deals, but he claims he was kept in the dark about them. And despite her extraordinary ability to maintain the appearance of having her life together and financial success, there were several occasions when Major had a feeling that Marcy's business was in the gray area.
Getting to know her and finding out pertaining to how she got her money, then I realized there was ups and downs. And it just depends on how paperwork was going. And what I mean by that is, like, if she could find other investors to lease auction one of the places, they would have to give $10,000 for the first 6 months if they didn't. In other words, if their credit wasn't good enough to buy the house, then she would lease option it to them. That means that they have to pay $10,000 to get the house plus pay the mortgage. And within 6 months, she would tell them, you know, we'll work on your credit or whatever to get it up high enough for you to purchase the home. But during that time, we had two houses. They were both right around the corner from each other in Eagles Landing subdivision. And so she lost both of those cribs because she couldn't get the business handled like she wanted. And if she wasn't up in money, she kept hustling because she knew my money was funny. Me selling my car, yeah, that was good, but that was only going to last for a moment. That wasn't going to be like the money that I got for the car was like a couple thousand. The money that she get be like in the teens of thousands. So, you know, of course, anytime she do that, we'd get a house and she still have cash. And she would keep moving, but sometimes she would get a little lazy and might not keep hustling like she was hungry. And we might fall behind on those mortgages and whatever. Because what she would do is take some of the money from whatever she got at the closing table and pay the mortgage on that house up for like 6 months. Let's say the mortgage was $3,500 a month. She would pay it up for 6 months and then have plenty of money left and then try to do her business as far as getting a lease option or whatever.
Shortly before her disappearance, Marcy had been incarcerated again at a local county jail for unpaid traffic tickets and a minor theft charge. Marcy never told Major the details, but he was able to walk us through the timeline of events, from Marcy going to jail to what happened after she was released.
I went to visit her when she was in jail in Clayton County. She never told me why. That I can recall. I know she was on probation and her and a probation officer was going at it. But that was after she got out. When she got out, she was living with her relatives. When she was in jail, I went to visit her or whatever. And then I didn't see her again for a while. And what I mean a while, let's just say about 8 months. Like I've always felt, even since the last time I've seen her, that she'd always come back because she's spontaneous like that. Like, you know, just like bird shit in a sense. She'd just drop out of the sky on you. So that's kind of how we got back together. She called me and was like, how you doing? And my heart started to fluctuate and everything because this woman just had a hold on me as far as she just excited me. And then she did things for me too. You know, like she bought me an old school car, things like that. You know what I mean? She treated me like a king. We hadn't connected for a while. We had been apart. Even though we had been married or whatever, like I said, it wasn't a normal type of marriage. Anyway, she would come right back up, you know what I mean? And then she might seek me out again. So I never was worried about that. So she was like, baby, I need you. And I was like Popeye, and that was olive oil. So she was like, I got to get out of my sister's house and all that. Because the kids were staying at her mom's house. She had lost the houses that she had when she was doing whatever. So she was back to square one. And I guess this had to do with her going to jail because she never told me that part. I said, well, I got this car for sale. As soon as I sell it, I had classic 62 Impala. I sold the car for chump change because, you know, I wanted us to be together. We went and got us a hotel room. You know, everything was good. Of course, you know, we were just spending money, the money that we had from selling the car. So we went to the second hotel because that one was real expensive. She was telling me stuff like, you know, her and her ex was working on getting another house situation going. He still worked in the mortgage business.
While Marcy and Major were staying in the hotel, Marcy continued to try to work at her business and would sometimes meet up with people she worked with in order to negotiate her real estate deals. One of these men was Carl, Marcy's ex-boyfriend with whom she maintained contact and worked with on occasion. So when Marcy told Major that Carl was coming to the hotel, Major didn't think too much of it.
At that time, she didn't have a car, and I didn't have a car. So this guy's pulling up or whatever, and it's just me and her in a room. She's going to have some kind of excuse to go out to see him. So she would tell me, you know, he's coming over, and he's going to give me a little money. And like I said, I had already pretty much exhausted the little funds that we had from the car. So she told me he was helping her to get some loans. Every time she got loans, she would take a lot of money off of the house from equity, house improvement, things like that she would put on the loan. Therefore, at the closing table, she might get $50,000 in cash. Well, $50,000 in a bank check. We off the running again, living in a nice house. So, of course, when she told me that, it didn't faze me because I knew our money was rolling out and I wanted to be with her. So the night before everything, she told me that Carl was coming over. She had to sign some paperwork and that he was coming to the store, right, which was right across the street from the hotel. So I walked down with her. She walked across the street and she got in the truck with some guy. I assumed at the time that that was him, which the cops would later on tell me. They didn't tell me different. They just said, did you see him? Did you see his face? Which I had to say no, because I didn't. But anyway, so she went over there, whatever, came back like she said, and had a little money with her. And we went out to eat. And, you know, we had a great night. The next day, I don't know what day of the week was, but I knew which within the next couple of days from then, I had to pay for the room because we was paying weekly.
Major knew that the rent was due on the room they were staying in. Their relationship was unusual, with both Major and Marcy engaging in some sketchy activities in order to make money. But this was the norm for them, so Major left to go make some money as he usually did, and assumed Marcy would be waiting for him when he returned.
After that night, the next morning, I told Lisa, well, I'm going to get some money. I had already called my friend Allison to come and pick me up. So she knew about Allie and everything. Allie was working in credit collections. She was established, and she gave me a little money. And I called her, and I said, I'm on my way back. I spent a little time with Allie. So when I called her and told her I'm on my way back, she was like, okay, well, I'm down here at the Kinko's. The reason why I guess she told me she was at the Kinko's is because at that hotel that we was at, you had to use a physical key to get in the room. And, of course, she had the key when I left because, you know, in case she wanted to go out the door or whatever, you had to lock it. So I said, okay, you know, we're talking whatever. I had about $300-some I had came up on, so I could take care of the room and everything. We can get something to eat, and we do what we're doing to keep making it through. I come back, and she dropped me off. Just so you know how the hotel is set up, it's like on one side, it's like a plaza. Then a hotel, then an open space inside of the hotel towards the, if you're standing in front of the hotel, to the right is another little plaza with a Kinko's in it. So when she said she was at the Kinko's, you know, like I said, when I got out the car, I was talking to her on the phone. I said, okay, well, I'm about to come over to the Kinko's. And she said, okay, we hung up the phone. I walk over to the Kinko's. She ain't at the Kinko's. I'm calling the phone, where you at? Because I'm thinking maybe she in the bathroom at the Kinko's. So I'm looking crazy in the Kinko's, and I'm walking around and everything looking for her, and she's not there. So I'm calling the phone. She wouldn't pick up, so I went to the front desk at the Kinko's, and I'm asking the people, have you seen this lady or whatever? And it was like, no, nobody been in here. She haven't been in here.
Major wondered why Marcy would tell him she was down at the print shop when he told her that he was on his way over there and she wasn't there. But he figured she had probably returned to the hotel since she had the key. So he made his way back to find his wife.
So I'm calling the phone, I'm like, okay, she's playing games. But maybe she at the hotel room and she was just trying to stall so she could get whoever out of the hotel before I could get back in the hotel. So I go through the door of the hotel, take the elevator up. As soon as I get off the elevator, one of the housekeepers young girl. I want to say she was about 23, 24. She come walking towards me, and she's like, hey, your friend told me to give you the key. And that's when it hit me in my chest that she was playing games. I didn't think of nothing happening bad to Marcy. I just thought that she just went off. You know what I mean? Got her some money or whatever. And so I went to the room. All her shit was gone. So I'm calling the phone. I might have called her phone 6-7 hours. This is before I even left. Daytime around 11, at least 12 or 1 o'clock when I got back to the hotel. It was dark when I left. But all her shit was gone. I was just sitting there calling. She wouldn't pick up. All her stuff was gone. So I went down to the front desk, turned in the key. My partner Kofi come and pick me up. I'm gone. I'm still calling her phone all that night, all into the next day. And that's when I said, something ain't right. Because she would have called me and she would have said something. But anyway, I figured she had ran off a call or whatever, and because she was getting towards the money, and eventually she'd get back with me. But I still want to talk to her, so I call her sister. And I said, you know, have you seen Marcy? She was like, the last time I seen Marcy, she was with you.
Though Marcy was often absent from her family and off running her businesses, her family knew something was wrong when they hadn't heard from her in an unusually long time. Shahida told us what she remembers about her mom and grandmother deciding to file a missing persons report.
You know, I was reaching out to her. Again, I wasn't too alarmed because she was young. You know, there was times she just didn't answer her phone. She still partied a lot. Although she was a mom, although she had her own business and stuff like that, she was still, you know, in her late 20s and partied a lot. So, you know, I was reaching out to her. You know, I couldn't get in touch with her, and then started noticing that my aunt, my mom, you know, no one's hearing from her. And then Carl showing up at my house. I had just graduated high school, so pretty much a kid as well. And him showing up saying that he hasn't heard from her was kind of like, what's going on? Like, maybe there's something more to it than her just partying or just lost her phone or something like that, something that has happened in the past. But my mom ended up getting with my grandmother and filing the missing persons report. And, you know, that's when I found out that, wow, this is pretty serious. At that point, I think it was maybe like a week. I think it was my mom. You know, she was kind of encouraging my grandmother to call. My grandmother was just like, you know, she's fine. It's not a big deal. She does this all the time, that sort of thing. My mom was just really adamant about it. So she and my mom went together.
Marcy's behavior with the call claiming she was at the print shop and then disappearing from their hotel was odd, even for her. But Major didn't realize she had been reported missing and still thought she had gone on another one of her ventures and would soon be back, until he got a phone call that he was never expecting to receive.
I think maybe a couple of days later is when I get a call from the detective. And that's when the shit got real. So the cop is on me now. And it's like, what the hell? You know what I mean? And they told me straight up, your wife is missing. The questions that they asked me was like, as if they were assuming that I did something to hurt her. So finally, and I would ask them, you know, are you looking at me as some suspect or something like that? Because I would never put my hand on her. I never raised my hand to her. And she ain't the type of person that you can raise your hand to. She's very athletic and very, she ain't with that. Finally, one of the officers said to me, he was like, yeah, they think you killed her. And that hurt so bad. And it hit me in my stomach so hard. But at the same time, it scared the shit out of me. I would never do nothing to hurt her in no kind of way.
Major was adamant that he had nothing to do with Marcy's disappearance. But he knew the police always look at the spouse first. So he remained as cooperative as possible and tried to answer all of their questions, especially the toughest of all. Would Marcy leave her kids behind?
When it was like she ain't coming to see the kids, now that's when shit got real, because she loved the kids. Like, Marcy and the kids is like, they all was kids. Like, Marcy's a very energetic woman. So She loved her kids. If, you know, no matter what, she wouldn't do nothing to disappoint them. Now, they've been through hell with her and stuff as far as the having to stay at grandma's house probably too many times. But the bottom line is that they always knew that when mama come back, she's going to come back strong. So by the cops saying, well, do you think that she would just leave her kids? See, the way they said it wasn't, you know, I was like, no, because I know she wouldn't. Anyway, them telling me that they think that I might have killed her, that's when shit got real for me. So, and from that point on, it's like, Marcy picked up this damn phone, but she ain't picking up the phone. And then they put me through it, man. They did everything, I guess, until they got their answers.
With no sign of Marcy returning like she usually did, and Major being scrutinized by the police, he knew he had to do something to protect himself from being charged with her murder, even if there was no evidence he had harmed her. So he began looking for anything that would clear his name, and he started with the hotel room they had been living in.
I did whatever it could take to get myself exonerated. I gave them all the evidence they needed. The only thing that really saved me, I assume, because they never told me, is the video from the hotel and the key, that physical key. The hotels that they have today, you got to use a little swipe key or something. But back, that physical key, and there wasn't no two keys, there's only one key. And so by them, I guess, I'm assuming, interviewing the maid and then the physical key, that whole scenario, and seeing video or whatever, they knew I ain't did nothing to her. And they probably saw her when she did whatever. You know what I'm saying? They never shared this information with me.
Major says that when Marcy's family filed the missing persons report, they filed it under Major's last name, Peterson, though Marcy had never officially taken his name. Marcy is listed in the online databases under the Peterson name, which is why we used both last names in the title of the story. At the time, Marcy had several outstanding warrants under her maiden name, Crane. And Major thinks this had the police looking at him as a suspect, instead of looking for Marcy elsewhere.
They knew that Marcy was in trouble as far as in her maiden name. The probation and the jail and all that stuff would probably pop up. So giving them our married name would make them initially just go towards me. The cops just kept harassing me. And it's sad because they was learning new information every time they talked to me. And what I mean by new information is that when her sisters, I mean, whoever went and filed a missing report, they didn't file it under her maiden name. Because when they found out that her name was Marcy Crane, they just stopped talking to me. So by them not telling her, that kind of like gave them a whole lot of time to go in circles because they didn't know who they was really looking for. You know, and that's the sad part of it. But, and only when I say sad part of it, you know, I've been watching First 48 for years, and it's like 48 hours is your window. And if you don't know the name of the person that you're looking for years, because they gave you Marcy Peterson instead of Marcy Crane. So I guess after they found out that she was Marcy Crane, they started looking towards the jails or whatever, I guess, seeing the real thing. And I guess they know more than I know because I ain't never pulled her record up. I don't know nothing about her doing anything bad, driving without a driver's license and stuff like that, but nothing big. Whatever happened in Clayton County was big enough to spook her a little bit. You didn't never know if she was telling you the actual truth about that or not. All I know is that I put money on the books. I went up there, seen her one time.
About 9 months prior to her disappearance, Marcy had been charged with criminal trespass and theft by taking in Clayton County, Georgia. Major wasn't aware of the specific charges, but he knew that something had happened there that Marcy did not want to deal with. He thinks these charges and the money she had borrowed from someone else may have had something to do with her disappearance.
The other theory I assume is Marcy borrowed some money from somebody, which she told me that the guy was saying little threatening things, but she wasn't sweating it because I guess she had dealt with him before on some, he was helping her to set up a business and he gave her a loan and she was supposed to give it to him and she didn't give it back to him on time. But that wasn't nothing new. It wasn't nothing to be afraid of. I ain't never heard nobody threaten her, ever. That's just what she said. And yet, in my mind, all I have ever thought, and this is the truth, this is how I feel. I just think that, and I don't know why, but I think she took a walk away. The reason why I think that is because, you know, she went to jail and then she didn't want to go back to jail. Her probation officer or whatever, she wasn't going to see him right. And I heard several conversations where he was telling her, come in, surrender yourself, or not surrender yourself, but come in. You better come in on this day or whatever. So I think she needed to come up with some probation money. It wasn't like, we're going to lock you up. But I think that she knew some stuff that she just wasn't telling me. It's just too many things that went through my mind over the years.
Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be a challenge. I've always had problems, whether it was with the fit or quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist, and you can find it at Skims. From cropped silhouettes to long-sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. You know that I've been wearing Skims for a long time, and recently tried one of their t-shirts. It's the best-fitting tee I've ever worn. Skims makes the best basics and foundations. I got the boyfriend t-shirt in Onyx, and it's so soft and comfortable. I want to wear it every day. It literally fits like a dream. Shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com, now available in sizes extra, extra small to 4X. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know I sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. As the police were conducting their investigation, Marcy's family continued to search for her, but felt like they didn't get much feedback about what was happening on the law enforcement side. One thing that police were able to confirm was that Marcy's phone records had been checked, and her last phone call was to a friend of hers. But the friend said that Marcy didn't indicate that she planned to leave or say anything out of the ordinary. Shahida shared with us some of what she remembers about the police investigation.
They were telling us that they couldn't reach out to call for a follow-up interview, you know, and I think they wanted to do a lie detector test with him and Major. And I'm not sure, you may be able to find this information, but one of them refused, and I don't remember which one it was. It was so long ago. So when we spoke with them, you know, regarding like, hey, we found his family online and gave them the information and all of that, everything that we communicated with one of his daughters, they hadn't had any new updates or anything to share.
We reached out to the Cobb County Sheriff's Office, who initially told us that the officer who was in charge of Marcy's case had moved out of the homicide unit, but would be able to grant us an interview, pending approval from his superiors. We didn't know why Marcy's case was assigned to the homicide unit and wanted to inquire further, but we never heard from the police again, despite numerous attempts over many months to contact them for an interview. There was one theory, or perhaps rumor, that seemed to circle around Marcy's family and their search for her. We heard Major tell us that Marcy had expressed concern about a man she owed money to, but he didn't know more than that. Shahida explained to us what she knows of this theory.
My aunt, who she went to stay with, I didn't know this part, that she owed someone. I guess someone lended her $30,000. And my aunt was in the car with her, along with one of Marcy's best friends. I guess the guy spotted her. She said that the guy almost ran them off the road and yelled out his window, "I'm going to get you."
We asked Shahida what she thinks happened to Marcy, and she isn't quite sure, but feels there's just something not right with the men Marcy had two significant relationships with, Major and Carl.
I don't know, honestly. Like, when there's just a lack of information, you know, I think your mind just starts to wonder. So there's a lot of different scenarios that I've kind of went back and forth with my head. For a long time, I thought maybe she ran off with Carl. At first, I thought maybe Major had did something to her. Maybe he got jealous that she was communicating with Carl again and snapped or something. Those were my two thoughts. I don't know for sure because, you know, Major is like a real mystery. Not knowing him, her not knowing him for a really long time before they got married and not knowing anything about him is just a little creepy. And then the fact that Detective Twitz had mentioned years ago that there was stuff that he found out about his background that he couldn't disclose to us kind of scared me as well. So it's still like, who is this guy that was around my aunt? And what is he capable of? Like, is he really innocent? You know, my sister, we've always done like our own digging, you know, and my sister found him on Instagram and communicated with him. He claims that, you know, she left with Carl and that was the last time he saw her and there was no argument or dispute about it. And he pretty much stuck with that story since my sister found him on Instagram and reached out to him. But, you know, again, we don't know anything about him. We don't really know his character. He was always really quiet when he was around. I'm just not sure. And, you know, the fact that Carl had a mysterious background as well, it's like, you know, maybe we didn't know him as well as we thought we knew him. And we don't know what he was capable of either, so. Then there's the guy that almost ran her off the road saying that I'm going to get you the $30,000 deal. It's just a lot of different scenarios.
Shahida has tried to track Carl down for years to see if he has any valuable information regarding Marcy.
Major said that she last left with Carl, but Carl told me that he hadn't heard from her and thought that she was going back with Major. So we never really got any answers. And with the detective that was on the case, he told us that there were some things that he uncovered about both Major and Carl about their background. So Carl, last I heard, he moved back to New York, which is where we knew him to be from. But for years, we couldn't reach him. We couldn't reach, like, anyone of his family. Like, you know, we were really close with his family, his kids, his sister, and we couldn't find or reach anyone. You know, all the numbers and everything we had from them didn't work. About a year ago, we ended up locating them on his daughter, one of his daughters, on Facebook. And, you know, tried to reach out to her, just asked how her dad was and to see if she said anything that may spark any kind of clue into what may have happened. She just said, "Sorry to hear about your aunt." I asked her how her dad was. I was like, "Hey, you know, how's your dad? I really miss him." And, you know, she was like, "I'll tell him you said hi." That was it. Everyone else that we found on Facebook during that same time that was connected to her, they never responded to our Facebook messages.
There's another very different theory about what happened to Marcy that has been kept quiet in her family for all of these years. When we spoke to her nephew, Jatarvis, he told us that he didn't know Marcy was missing for years, and he thinks that there are people in Marcy's family who purposely don't want to talk about her, and may even know more about her disappearance than they've let on.
I have no idea of what happened whatsoever.
Nobody has never spoken a word to me about this. And I didn't say anything to anybody either, because I just really want to see how long was it going to be before anybody say anything to me, knowing how close I was to my aunt. My aunt is like 2 years older than me. That was like my sister. I think somebody did finally mention it to me while I was in prison, before I had got out. Since I've been out, like, it was, nobody never spoke a word of it to me. I don't know, it just seemed like a forbidden conversation or something. And I feel like that's not for no reason. Either some people are afraid, it's just not normal. Not normal at all. And just a lot of the things that people are telling me that my grandma be telling my aunt's kids just seem real crazy to me. Like, why would you want to try to paint a bad picture of her to her kids? You know what I'm saying? Like, that is crazy. You know, it's just too much going on with her. She needs to be looked at. I need to know what happened to my aunt. I hear she's planning some forgive and forget dinner now. What the hell are we forgiving and forgetting? And then calling me kind of, my family ain't really all that tight no more like that, especially since I've been gone and came back. But it's just a lot of shit that I see that just keep me to myself. So she's been calling me kind of regular and not really having nothing to say. Just, I know when somebody's trying to feel me out. It's crazy. And I'm going to be honest, if she did it, she had help. And if she had help, it's my other aunt. I don't think she's never had a reason. But they've all been abused their whole life. Can't somebody look into the past and see all the records? I don't even know if there are records, but I mean, as much as it happened, there should be some kind of records as throughout their life of them being abused. Like I say, I saw it as an adult. But like I say, my oldest aunt, she got abused too all her life. Then when she got to be an adult, like whenever my grandma needed, felt like she wanted to go jump on another one of them, she always went and got her to help. So them two need to be investigated. I wasn't here when all this happened. So I hear that my mom told the detective that she thinks that my grandma had something to do with it from the beginning. And they discredited her because at the time, she was out in the streets on dope real bad. And they discredited her. My grandma probably dragged her name or whatever in the ground so they wouldn't listen to her. She didn't say that for no reason, because the shit that she'd been through, the things that they done to her throughout her life, probably the reason why she was on crack. Why wouldn't they even pay that no attention just because of where she just came from?
When we spoke with Marcy's daughter, Khadijah, one of the things we asked her is how she and her siblings managed after their mom disappeared. She said that they're all different in their own ways, but not having her mom for most of her life has definitely shaped who she is today.
It's different for all of us, definitely, all of us five. But for me, it's like not having your mom, it's always that kind of like, even my dad, because my dad is not as in my life as I would think. You know, you would think like your dad would take over if your mom is not, and that's not kind of how the case went. And so it's just like, you know, not having those parents. I feel like that has a lot to do with, like, my relationships. You know, I feel like I'd be wanting more or gravitating to more attention or wanting to fill that space that I didn't have. I definitely, with my kids, it's like, oh, my gosh, I could never leave them. You know what I mean? Because I know how, you know, that feels, having your friends, having their moms and, you know, doing stuff with their parents, or, you know, even in a relationship, having your significant other, having your moms and stuff around. So it's always kind of like, dang, you know, I wish my mom was here. But I just try to be as positive as possible, you know, love my kids as much as I would want anybody to be loved. So I definitely, I don't think it's made me a bad person, because, you know, I really definitely think that I'm loving and caring, and I don't try to hold any type of grudge towards my mom. I definitely love her. I don't know, again, like her situation, what she was going through. I know having two kids is hard. So five, I can only imagine some of the things that she had to deal with by herself. So I don't know what her thoughts were, her plans, if she was in trouble. I don't know. I definitely wouldn't be angry with her or anything like that. You know, it's more like questions, like what happened? But yeah, again, she was always fun and loving. Like, that's kind of how I remembered her. And I think that's good, you know, because I don't have any bad thoughts or bad memories towards her at all.
So what happened to Marcy Crane on October 30th, 2003? Why did she suddenly leave the hotel where she and her husband had been staying? Was there a business deal that she was involved in that went wrong and something terrible happened to Marcy? And what about the story that a man had loaned her a large sum of money and threatened her life when she didn't pay him back? Did the police ever identify this man? There are so many mysteries in Marcy's story. We know she was involved with shady business deals, but we don't know exactly what she was doing because she kept the details to herself. It sounds like there's one man who did know what Marcy was up to, and that's Carl. And her family says they later learned that that isn't his real name. He told Shahida that he'd always be there for her family, and then moved out of state and never contacted them again. Does he know more about what happened to Marcy? Was Marcy feeling under pressure because of her shady business deals? Or perhaps because of her run-ins with police? Could she have left and started her life over somewhere else? At the time of her disappearance, Marcy Crane, who may also have used the last name Peterson, was 28 years old. She was 5'8" tall and weighed around 140 pounds. She has black hair and brown eyes. She also has two tattoos, one that says Carl and the other is a Chinese symbol. If you have any information about the disappearance of Marcy Crane, you're asked to call the Cobb County Police Department at 770-499-3862. You can follow Marcy's story on social media at Missing Marcy Crane.
And you get different stories, so one side tells you one thing, other side tells you another thing. So, you know, I just don't know. You know, I've been told it was kind of like not setting, so kind of planned, I'm guessing. You know, her saying to them that, you know, I'm going away for a while, somebody watch these kids or something like that. You know what I mean? So I feel like she wanted to have somebody watching us. Like, I don't think it was something that she just, you know, did out of the blue. I think she kind of planned it in a way. But I just never know because, again, you get different stories from different people.
That brings us to the end of episode 212. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and private discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from South Dakota. Thanks for listening.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.